Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. And we're back after a bit of a hiatus. Tony, I'm in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I'm at the ATLAS conference, which stands for Association of Technology Leaders in Independent Schools. And this is their 8th annual conference, and it's pretty good. It's pretty good so far. But the weather here in Grand Rapids is terrible because Midwest spring is the freaking worst. Totally sucks. Yeah. It's snowing and sleeting and a high of 40 degrees Fahrenheit. It's not very fun.
If you want me to come to your conference, you have to have it somewhere that I want to go.
Next year's in Reno.
I'm there, dude. Let's Reno 911.
Let's do it. Well, let's go to Reno.
Maybe they have a Reno 911 tour.
I hope they're the keynote speakers because I can learn a lot. I want to hear all about their cybersecurity division. I'm sure they have one. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, I'll see if there's an episode where somebody hacks them. I'm sure there is.
That's going to be awesome. Anyway, but yeah, next year in Reno. So maybe we can get together, podcast in person. Maybe.
It'll never happen. I will never work when I'm at a conference.
IT Babble's not work. It's all pleasure. It's all fun. That's all true. The best.
Sometimes I forget.
All right. So,
So Patrick,
yep.
Here's my first question. Cause
go for it.
The reason we're doing this podcast is so Patrick, while
it's fresh in my mind.
Can debrief us. But I just want to know, are you suffering from conference pump?
No, I'm not. So here's my quick story. I had to go to a wedding on Saturday in Columbus, Ohio, which is about 4.5 hours from Grand Rapids. So I went to the wedding on Saturday, had a really good time, maybe too good of a time. Sunday morning, got up, got in the car, drove, visited a mutual friend of ours, Tony, because her and her children don't live too far from Grand Rapids. About 45 minutes.
Oh. Can I say her name?
Yeah, I guess so.
Corinne?
Yeah. Boom. And just hung out there for a couple hours and then on. So by the time I made it to the conference, I checked in. It was Sunday, so nothing was going on. I went up to my room, unpacked, changed, went, worked out, came back, showered, ate, went to bed. Conference, it can take a lot out of you, you know, especially if you got engaging workshops. And almost all my workshops were pretty engaging or certainly thought-provoking. Even if I didn't agree with everything that I heard, it still got me thinking. So, you know, use the old noodle long enough, it wears you down. Wears you down.
Yep.
Yep.
Did you even agree with what you were saying?
I don't even know. I don't know. I'm not here to pee in anybody's cornflakes. So if I heard some things that were a little stupid, I'm not going to lie. And I'm going to talk about those here in a second. So I went to one workshop by Dr. Gary Stager. It's Stager, right? It's not Stager. I've been saying Stager, but
it's Stager. I mean, I am a former, student of his, not like a LinkedIn student, but he actually was my teacher in grad school. And, that's what I called him. And that could have been why he was mad at me all the time.
His workshop was a case against innovation. And he was just talking about how something innovative that students, and I'm doing air quotes, but you can't see this, they're innovated and students have to learn it for their future career or if they don't get left behind. And he says usually when you bring in this innovation, it's got to make room for something else. So you usually have something that's established that's usually working and it has to go. He goes, usually schools don't really bring in anything that's truly innovative.
Yeah. A better way to say it is we shouldn't be innovating. We should be iterating.
It, yeah. You know,
we should be building on what works, not throwing everything out and starting over.
That's exactly what he was saying. He's like, you should be building upon, you know, what's working, what curriculum is. He didn't use the word curriculum, but what ideas are being taught and are very important for the students. What's important for the students? And he goes, sometimes that gets wayside for something that's new and shiny, that is in that's being talked about by everybody. And you know, there could be a fear of, oh, we don't want to be left behind because school A down the street is using it. We should use it too, kind of a thing. So, yeah, he just talked about that. And then I had lunch. I was sitting with some very nice people, and then they were talking. They were using the word innovation and innovative in very unusual ways, Tony. So one person said, well, students innovate in different ways. And okay. So I was like, oh, all right. And there was a follow up, and he says, you know, some students might innovate with a Chromebook, and some might innovate with an iPad, and some teachers might innovate with a smart board, and some might just innovate with a whiteboard. And I was like, oh my gosh, you're using the wrong word. You're just throwing the word innovate around, but that's not what you're talking about. You're talking about different things here. So it was, and then I heard it at another workshop. I heard somebody use the word innovate incorrectly. And I was like, oh my gosh, is this an epidemic that we're in where people are just throwing this word around and there really is no innovation? Yeah. And it's,
I hear it all the time. Somebody told me something that they saw at the National Association of Independent Schools.
Yep.
And they're like, it's so innovative. And I was like, that's been dead for years. That's what I said. I was like,
was it live binders? Was it live binders?
Binders are so innovative. It's too personal, but like, okay, like, that has been dead for years. Like, no, that is not innovation.
Yeah.
That is just what you saw was something that failed and somebody has decided to recycle it. Because, Patrick, it just wasn't the right time. Now, they were ahead of their time, Patrick. And, you know, that can be true. But, unfortunately, if you're ahead of your time, sometimes that's it.
That's, you know, to go back to one of our cover art, the only thing that was ahead of its time that truly ahead of it was the Homer. The Homer was truly ahead of its time.
That's right. The Homer.
The Homer. But no, I'm having a good time. I'm meeting a lot of great people. The conference is very good. The hotel is very nice. The conference is extremely well organized. I got to give it to the Atlas people. And the workshops are all high quality. They're all very, very good. I don't get to sense anybody threw something together like yesterday morning.
Right.
It's very well prepared and. Yeah, it's great. It's great. If people get a chance and you have the means, Atlas is a wonderful, is a good conference. Definitely worth, maybe not every year, but definitely worth going to once in a while. So yeah.
Well, that's good to hear. I mean, I know a lot of people were excited about it. I couldn't go. I was helping them with some other people on their AI task force to get some of their paperwork ready.
Yep.
And the stuff I wrote, no one's going to read because it's, you know, just about lawsuits and what you shouldn't do. So no one's going to read that.
No one's going to. But
it's too boring, Patrick.
I'm going to. They have a very special AI session that runs for 5 hours on Wednesday, and I'm going to that. And I'm sure you're part of what you worked on is going to be in there. I'm quite convinced.
My prediction is this is going to be like, you know, a little bit overhyped, but that's just my prediction. I could be wrong.
I'm going to just ask the question, how do you get around the terms of service? Because you have to have parental consent. And what happens when the parent says no, how do you handle that?
And that's what you need to ask. So actually what you need to state, because this is better. Okay, this is better.
All right.
And not to be a troll.
Even though it is
trolling. Okay, it is. But you're not being a troll.
Yes.
So let's just say that a few years ago, we wouldn't have called you a troll, but some people are going to be like, man, that guy's a troll. this is what you need to say. You need to say, we're all aware that the terms of service require anyone between 13 and 18 to have parental consent if the school advocates for the service. Just say that. We're all aware.
Well, yeah, we're all aware.
Say, yeah. So what do you do if, let's say, 20% of the students' families say no?
Yep.
And throw it out there like that, and then I think you have like a really solid argument, and you don't have to even argue. You just put that out there for people to discuss.
Yeah.
Because that's really what you want. You need people to get to their own conclusion about this stuff. You don't want to, just tell them how it is. And I've been speaking to people who are super like into the AI stuff. Probably at this stage have used the AI 1/64th as much as me. Bring that up. I don't even bring up that I'm trying to build like some enterprise tools that use it.
Yeah.
But I don't bring that up, and I'll try to kind of walk them through these issues by just prompting them to think about it. And then I'll say, I know three attorneys who deal with intellectual property, privacy, copyright, trademark, trade secrets, and all three of them have advised all of their clients, including schools, to not use this at all for business purposes or educational purposes. How do you feel about that? These are people who are just looking at the lawsuits that are on deck, and there are lawsuits on deck. So I put those lawsuits in the Atlas paperwork, hoping that they share them because they're already filed. They're just waiting. It's funny. You can ask most AIs what lawsuits are pending against them, which people, again, people don't do that. They don't ask the AI stuff like that usually. Yeah. And their face just kind of goes blank, and it's like, that's what you want. If they're going to use it, fine, but let's just let them come to terms with like what it means to use it.
Yeah. And that there is a little bit of risk there. I asked ChatGPT if it was COPPA compliant, and it tried to be sneaky and it said, well, different places in the world have different privacy laws concerning children and their online behavior. I said, in America, if you're a teacher in America, is ChatGPT COPPA compliant? And it pretty much said, no, it was not. I had a teacher who wanted to use it with her eighth grade students, and I just told her, like, I'm afraid I don't think we can do it. It's a big can of worms to open up. I said, you can use it. You can use it and demonstrate it for them. And if you want to, she wanted them to have it generate papers on different topics, and then they were going to evaluate the papers, which is, I think this is a good idea. I said, you just generate the papers yourself. And then just copy and paste them into a Google Doc and then share that with whoever you want. That's totally fine, I think. But I just don't want them to have accounts. So, because, they're not. Some are 13, some are not. Nobody would have parental consent. So.
Yeah, and that's the right answer. And I had someone ask me about it. And I'm like, listen, I don't think you should advocate for it. Like, don't tell your kids they have to use it. Just if they're using it at home on their own and they're using it at home, just let that go. And don't tell them it's required for class. I'm like, that's where we're at. Like, if the parents know about it, they all do, and they want their kids to use it, that's a family decision. So that's kind of where, I've left it for now. And I know there's going to be some bigger conversations about it. And I am legitimately putting together like a set of tools. And the next thing is going to be to figure out the best way to give people access to the tools and how to ensure like the information that's not supposed to go into the AI directly is doesn't go in or is obfuscated. So there's not really any connection. Like, it's really impossible basically to know like what it's about and whose information is in it. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Okay. That's good. That's good. Yeah. But it's weird. There are people who are talking about it, but there's not a lot of workshops about it at all. I think that they had this big kind of AI workshop they had one at the beginning of the conference and one at the end of the conference. And I think they purposely didn't want smaller workshops. They wanted people to go to these kind of larger, these large scale 5-hour workshops about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So, well, it's good that you're not suffering from conference pump and that you don't have a list of stuff that you absolutely have to buy or there will be no way, Patrick, for your school to continue.
Because
that's what conference pump does, people.
It does.
You come back and you're like, if we don't do this, we're dead.
We're
dead in the water.
The last workshop I attended was put on by one of the sponsors of the conference. I'm not even going to talk about what service they're offering or anything like that, but they're clearly offering their services for schools and why they felt it was important for schools to use their service. But people were super pumped at the end of that workshop, and they're like, let me sign up. Here's my email address. Please contact me with a quote, you know? And I was just like, no, I don't. No, you got to take a step back and just.
I was reading a support thread today, and it was about Veracross and how, like, 4 years ago when the school had moved to Veracross, before they signed their contract, Veracross had told them, we're going to add this, we're going to add these features, we're going to add this integration. And they never did it. And then they followed up with them last week and they said, yeah, that's actually not on the roadmap right now. And you can see them presenting with good salespeople at a big conference like that.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, you know, people buy in for the promise. You know, you can't buy the roadmap.
Yeah. Yes.
If it's not working. And there was I had a friend recently that went to a VR demo. I always laugh at those. I have tried to make VR work. Like, and I've got a friend who's an expert with this stuff, and I talked to him about it, and I'm like, dude, do you know how long that would take kids to do just to like log into the system, blah, blah, blah. You know, we go through the whole thing because he's using it with like professionals. And so I'm like, okay, you're going to go to this demo. It's going to be amazing. But then I want you to ask them these two questions. One, how can I model something in 3D? And two, how can I send that model directly from the VR headset to my 3D printer? Just ask them those two questions. And if they don't have an answer right now, it's never going to happen. Like, it's not, that feature will never exist. Okay. It's just not going to happen. They knew from day one that they needed to do that. That would have been the day, like, we have to have this before we launch, and they couldn't make it work. And the reason they couldn't make it work is they have to have a ton of input from industry. All these manufacturers that make all these pieces of hardware, they have to choose a standard, they have to work with it, and they have to spend money to license to do this stuff. That's why the HoloLens for Microsoft is expensive, the new one, and why it works with certain industries, because they have partnered with the industries.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's like, you just ask those two questions and then it kind of falls like, oh, you can model. Oh, okay. I'm modeling. Model's done. Okay. What do I do with it now?
What do I print?
What do I do with it now?
Yeah. Can I send it directly to SketchUp and SketchUp Pro for maybe you're modeling like a structure? Can I send it to, SketchUp and then and start actually working on some of the more architectural?
If you use the right kind of headset and interface and you have a desktop running SketchUp for real, which you need to learn how to buy with the educational rate because it's incredibly expensive.
Yeah, I think it's over $1,000 a license.
You can model directly in SketchUp with VR, but it's not just a headset with like an online app store. It's not that.
Yeah.
So this is what I mean. Like all these technologies kind of roll around. And when you look at it, when you just look at like, okay, the only thing that's going to work for modeling, honestly, is something like a hologram. It's the only thing that's going to work.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
no one wants to wear headsets. I wear glasses. I just want to put my hands in and interact. You're like, Tony, Iron Man doesn't exist. It's like, well, until it does, that's where we're at. And I had somebody contact me last year because they're doing holograms. And they sent me a demo, and it was solid. And I asked our friend Phil in the Middle East about it. And he's like, yeah, man. He's like, this stuff is moving fast, and it works. And if anybody knows, he knows, right? Yeah. But it's really expensive. So I asked this company. I'm like, okay, I want you to be honest with me. I want to get on the ground floor and start using holograms in my school. What's my investment? They're like, basic setup to get it going with high school students, you're going to need to buy in at $50,000 right now. And they're like, that's ground floor. And they're like, but they were like, look, our prediction is 3 years. That buy-in is $15,000.
Well, that's a good move in the right direction.
So that means that that company has a product that works. They're selling to industry. Yep. They're building a product for education, and they're trying to drive the price down. That will probably work.
Yeah.
The price for VR has been almost the same for years.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So
it's
so
going
again,
up. I think it's going up for good VR headsets. I think it's gone from like $1,100, $1,200. Now you're seeing it into $2,000 to $3,000 range.
And there's another problem. This one company that I did test last year, and I like their hardware. Okay, I was just testing their hardware. Because everyone always just thinks I'm like insulting stuff and not using it. I don't insult stuff unless I've used it for a very long time.
And then you insult
it. Okay, if I'm insulting it, I probably own it and use it every day. So I contacted this company, and they let me do a full month, 1 month trial with two of their models. And so somebody came to me, and they're like, hey, there's a software when you use it. It says it supports VR, and it supports these headsets. I'm like, you know, those are great headsets, and they're not too expensive. So they're not like $200, but they're not $2,000.
Yeah, yep.
ByteDance bought them from China.
Yeah.
So, like, I definitely won't bring them into the school because there's been too much politics around ByteDance, and you have to use the ByteDance cloud.
Oh, which is in China.
Yeah,
or is so it the cloud that they have with Oracle here in the States?
I don't know.
I don't know. Who knows?
We would know. The point is, how am I going to explain that to anybody?
Yeah, because China's bad. Tony, didn't you
that's
see
like
the
if
news?
There's, that's that's like if you have
they're overthrowing the federal government with TikTok.
You know how there's like different trim lines on cars? Well,
yep.
There's some GM cars, GM model cars, like GM owned cars have an LS model. And a few years ago, the LS models were really problematic, but all the other ones were fine. Well, the price on all of their models dropped because no one knows the difference between an LS and whatever.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, those Silverados are like breaking all the time. Only the LSs, but no one knew that. So it's the same thing. It's like if there's bad PR on ByteDance, who owns TikTok, and data sharing,
yep.
I can't get ByteDance owned hardware,
yeah.
Even though it's good stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, for real. So, you know, there's a lot that, and this is also one of these things, like that just shows how transient the VR environment is. Like you want to buy into a company. This was just last year, and now they're owned by another company who may switch gears and say, you know, we're really just going to do entertainment, no more education.
Because
they're just not big enough, and they're going to sell out because they weren't making money.
Yeah, I went to a conference in Indianapolis, the HEC conference, 1 year, and they were giving out Lenovo Daydream VR headsets. For everybody who attended got
one.
And
I've used those.
And they're like $400. But within a year, Google killed Daydream. They're like, it's done. We're not doing it anymore. So this whatever you have right now, that's it. There's going to be no future updates. Probably people are going to stop. People are going to stop developing for it, except for people who want to develop just on their own, because I think they made everything open source. But yeah, it's just like you. It was just like that. It was like very quick.
And I used the Daydream when I was in Korea, and I thought it was a good product.
It's for the price. I thought it was very good. Yeah. It didn't help them when the presenter was like, I used it for 2 hours yesterday and I have got a raging headache. So please be aware that your students might experience that. And I was like, okay. So
my goodness.
Yeah.
I think
it's pretty funny.
You know, I think generally I don't like there's certain kinds of conferences that I just feel like I almost can't go to anymore because I will just explode. So I really like to go to conferences where they have people presenting on stuff like how the brain works and just cool stuff like that, things we don't really think about that impact like what we're doing. But anything that's focused on like products and like Steger said, like anything that's it's all about innovation. We got to innovate. And I'm like, you know, you can innovate or you could just learn how to use the technology you already installed, which happens all the time.
Yep.
You know, I can't think of how many times I've walked into a room and someone's like, you know, we bought these, but they just don't work. And I walk over to it and I'm like, have you gone into the menu? Did you use that? Like, it comes with a PDF. Like, did you read that? Mm-hmm. And guess what? It actually works.
Yeah.
So, and you're right. Like most of the time, innovation just means replace. You just replace it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but you should know that while you've been at this conference, I've been replacing my brain with the AI, Patrick. I don't make decisions anymore.
What? The AI has reprogrammed you?
I wake up. Well, it's limited on how much data it can accept, so it just sends me little messages that are kind of incomplete, and I just do whatever it says. That's going okay. I've lost some weight.
That's always a plus for people.
My gardening has improved. You know, there's things like that.
Well, that's good.
I'm not getting any sleep and I have nightmares, but other than that, it's totally fine. No, man. I've been, so just in case people don't know, I was messing around with the AI because somebody annoyed me. This was last week, I think. And, I got the AI to confirm very affirmatively that it had produced some content. And I posted that and people got mad at me. They're like, there's plenty of conversations where people have said, and you know, the rules say that it can't do this and it can't do that. And I'm like, okay, well, you got to understand something. The AI stores data. It's not just spitting stuff out. It remembers things. And although I use two separate accounts, they were both coming from the same IP address. So I am 100% sure that it knew that I asked it a question and it referenced that and it knew it and it knew it very clearly.
Yep.
Now, this is what's funny. I called Patrick a couple days later because I was experimenting. I showed him some stuff and I was getting really good results, like 70% positive returns. And I can actually still get those. But here's what's ridiculous.
Okay.
I can still get good results. But what the AI started doing, and I'm not kidding, it started asking me for more information. Hey, you know, I think maybe that was AI generated, but I need more information. And then it started giving me legal disclaimers. So I'm like, this is annoying. Like, first off, this is an awesome little feature I've cracked. And people might be like, well, Tony, 70% isn't that good. I'm like, use Turnitin.com, upload any paper that wasn't literally just a stolen paper. Okay.
Yep. Yep.
Most kids don't steal papers. Upload any paper. You're going to get, if a kid's plagiarized, you'll be lucky if it crosses 19%. We think it's plagiarized. It'll show a thing. It'll be like, they plagiarized this 20% maybe. You still have to investigate every single one of those to make sure it was plagiarized. So I would say that Turnitin is very accurate, but it's just accurate enough to tell you who you need to look into.
Yeah.
You can't go to a parent and say, well, Turnitin said that 20% of the paper looks like it was plagiarized. Sometimes it's just not cited properly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, you know, I'm getting 70%. I have these like four samples. And then I realized the more times I run the samples, it becomes more aware of what I'm trying to do. And I'm trying to get it to tell me something it's not supposed to tell me. So I took a break from that. I put that project off to the side, even though my buddy Dave is like, this is it, man. This is the moneymaker. And he's probably right.
Yeah.
The thing is, it wasn't in my development stream, meaning I have a plan, a development plan I'm following to get all these modules done, and that wasn't in it. And the development plan requires that I have sample data and that I plan it out on paper first, you know, like you're supposed to do with basic science.
Yeah.
So what I do very simply is figure out what kind of data I want. I have to build the data sets, which is very time consuming. And then I have to like make notes to follow certain guidelines, because you can go down a rabbit hole with all of these results, because I can return like 1,000 results from the AI in under an hour. Right. So, cause I'm using the API. So like, imagine how much output I'm seeing. Like my brain is just like output, output, output. And I get to a certain point and I just have to stop and I shut it off and I go back to it in a day or two, because it's just overwhelming. And like, you're looking for patterns, because it uses, I think they call it ALM, artificial language, like markup, or sort of artificial intelligence markup language. I think that's what it is. Mm-hmm. And so, it's funny, I learned how to do it without actually learning any of the terms. That's what happens when you spend hours on Stack Exchange, by the way. just reading insults like, you're an idiot. Yeah, like, you should never code like that.
Yeah, if you want
to. So anyway, like through this journey, I'm taking with this stuff, I want to say that I think it's really powerful. I think it's poorly managed. I think that the restrictions are stupid and don't make any sense for the most part. And I ask you, just like the VR thing, Patrick, this is, I go back to this question when people talk about it. Oh, that's really interesting. How do you overcome the token limit when you put in, let's say, more than 6,000 characters?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good question.
Okay. And so ChatGPT-4, if you're using the browser, will take, if I have to ballpark it, probably 12 to 14,000 characters. There's a limit on how many requests you can put in right now. And the quality of the reply is definitely related to the length of the request. Okay.
Yep.
So if I take a paper that's 10,000 characters and I divide it into 3,000, 3,000, 4,000, I will get significantly better results than if I send it all in.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. And I can show you that a million times. So even though it'll take it, it's not really handling it well. And the other ones below it, which I can't access GPT-4 from the API right now, it doesn't let me. I've applied. I only have access to different ones. The way that I access it and the options I have are a little bit different than what you have in the browser, but anyway, so I'm still on an older version, so I can't handle as many characters. So I have to come up with all these ways to like send it information. And I'm getting what I sent you today, like that I worked on that for like 2 days. And so now I've got it down to where I can feed it a table and get statistical analysis back. So now the goal is to figure out how big that table can be. Mm-hmm. And if the table's too big, how to chop it up.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where everybody gets stuck at. And you find all these like answers on how to fix it, and all the answers cost more money.
Yeah, of right? course. More so tokens.
This is what we're just kind of coming back around to. So I always ask people, how do you overcome putting in more than like 6,000 characters or 12,000 characters? They don't have an answer because they haven't done it. They haven't. They never thought about it. Yeah. And what services are you recommending people pay for? Because in order to even do all of the stuff at that level, you still got to pay for it.
Yeah. Yep.
So, and that kind of goes, you know, unmentioned, and it's important. Like, school can't have one account that they share, one paid account. So if teachers really want to get into stuff, they really need a paid account, to be honest with you. If you have a paid account for ChatGPT-4, you can do a lot of cool stuff, but you need the paid account. And it's $20 a month.
Yeah.
So it's over $200 a year times like 20 staff members. Like if you did have 20 staff members, you're at $4,000 a year. I mean, you got to think about how this is equitable and fair. Mm-hmm. If people are going to use that as a tool.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's yeah, and you're not hearing that. You're just hearing all you're seeing, or you're seeing people putting in prompts and getting results, and then discussing the results. You're like doctors putting in prompts about, you know, very specific medical conditions, and it gives you incorrect results or flaky results, or people putting in some good prompts and getting some pretty wild and amazing results. And that seems to be all that people are talking about. They're not going any deeper than that. I attended a webinar put on by Isaacs, and they just, all they did was talk about prompts the entire time. That was it. There was no discussion of terms of service. Well, there was a small discussion on terms of service, but the information they provided was not incorrect, but it wasn't complete. And then they just moved on from it very, very, very quickly. They didn't talk about COPA or FERPA compliance, and they didn't talk about cost at all, and about the equity about it. They did talk about... it's weird. They did ask it a bunch of questions using like male pronouns and female pronouns and non-gender specific pronouns, and it would return different results based on those pronouns, which I think that's kind of interesting. But of course, this is just a very small sample size. This isn't, you know, certainly not not anything that's certainly conclusive. It's just, you know, two people playing around with it and recording and sharing the results with one another, and then putting those into a bar graph, which, you know, it's a good start, but certainly not conclusive. And they're using probably the free version, you know, ChatGPT 3.5. So that's good. That's good.
Yeah. And this developer, I know, just to like throw this out. So we were talking about what I sent you today, right? Like data. Yep. And he's like, and he's a lot smarter than I am, like with programming the AI stuff. So I ask him like how he solves, like, you know, what's your strategy for handling large documents and stuff. Anyway, he's like, yeah, I think, you know, if AI were introduced to like help you, you know, work with data sets, it's probably going to be annoying, basically. Like, it's going to add complexity where you don't want complexity.
Yep.
Because the tools exist. But I'm starting to take a different, and I've kind of talked to you a bit about this, I'm starting to take a different approach to what the best use of these tools are. And I think it's not about necessarily doing statistical analysis, but finding a way to get people interested in the analysis. So I already know that Google Data Studio, for example, can model all our grade data. I know Power BI can do it. I was super excited a few months ago, Patrick. I worked with some guy who does Blackbaud like development.
Yep.
And he helped me get a strong Power BI like connection set up to Blackbaud, so I can just pull data out and make reports and do it all visually. I don't have to use any Blackbaud tools, right?
Yeah.
And
tools are very lacking in that regard, yeah, too. So
I'm super excited. So I go to this meeting and I'm presenting this, and I'm like, people are going to be super pumped. And they weren't. I was like, you guys should be really excited about this. We can like start really doing some deep dives on what
institutional research, Tony. That's the term.
But what if, you know, here's my thought. What if Patrick, let's say Patrick is a principal. He wakes up in the morning and he has a message on his phone, and the message just says, Patrick, it appears over the last week social studies grades have declined by 4.5%. And that's all it says. Is Patrick then going to look into social studies grades? Yes, he will. And that is what I'm aiming at.
Yeah.
I am not aiming at something that does the job. I'm aiming at something that takes a bunch of data and information that we're all surrounded with that's really hard to use because there's so much of it, and find something interesting to poke you with and say, hey, man, open your eyes and take a look at this.
Yep.
Like, this is weird. it doesn't mean anything, right? It's ambiguous, and that's what the AI has to be. It has to be ambiguous.
Yeah.
Because it won't be definitive. And if you don't believe me, this is how you test it. Find something that you think the AI would like not like maybe not want to tell you. Like, did you create this piece of like text on this web page? Ask it that question with that text 50 times and you will see the answers devolve. And I've done this with like the game Zork. I've asked it like 50 times, what is Zork? What is Zork? And I'm telling you, man, those last like five answers, they weren't good. I mean, it just assumes if you're poking at it that long that you're trying to do something bad. I guess that's how it works. Like,
yeah.
Or I don't think it's annoyed. It's just like, this is kind of like, it's kind of like a brute force attack, right?
Yep.
Like, it's a computer system. It's like, why is this guy asking me the same question over and over? I've already told you. Please, please reference previous answers.
I won't. Tell me the answer.
So anyway, that's kind of like a goal that I have in mind. And it's mostly about getting like kind of just piquing people's interest, which is very time consuming for us to do if we're actually building the data sets and making sure they work. It's very time consuming to like have little things go out that somebody might be interested in, you know?
Yep.
So anyway. Maybe I'm crazy, Patrick. Maybe the AI told me to say that.
I'm convinced it did. I'm convinced. Totally convinced. Well, I got one more topic on the agenda there, Tony. One more topic. There was a non-government organization called the United States Public Interest Research Group, USPIRG. They're kind of all over the place about what they're due, but they just want to inform, they want to inform like the public about things that they think they should know about, like e-waste, for example, or anyway, they got a lot of things. They last week, they wrote an article, They made a report, and then a week later they wrote an article about said report, and then that article got published on a bunch of tech blogs: The Verge, PC Gamer, Engadget, Ars Technica, Gizmodo, Mashable, and it's let's see here. They call it New Chromebook Churn Report Highlights Problems of Short-Lived Laptops. So the person who wrote the article is the same person who did the report. It's great.
Great.
Yeah. It's totally the best. And the report is very misleading. And I was going to go real deep into this, Tony. I was really going to get kind of – I wrote a response article. And I referenced every one of their claims, and I point out like, hey, is this correct? Is it not correct? Is it, you know, is it misleading? And there was a lot of things in there that are misleading. They talk about the auto update policy that are on Chromebooks and say that, you know, they call them the death date.
What?
And they kind of say like, after they've done that, they can't access secure websites, which is incorrect. They talk about how Chromebooks are difficult to repair, which is absolutely incorrect, and how it's difficult to get Chromebook parts, which is also incorrect. But, you know, so I wrote about that thinking people might be interested. And guess what, Tony? Nobody cares.
What?
Nobody cares. Nobody read my article. Everybody's reading other things, and this was published.
I think I read your article in my email.
Well, yeah, but most people.
But
it's not making any rounds or anything, because I don't think anybody cares. So USPIRG wrote this out there, and school districts that use Chromebooks know it's misleading, and they just don't care and ignore it. And anybody at the school who goes and asks them, they'll be like, nah, that report's not very well written. There's a lot of misleading stuff in it and can very easily break it down. So that stops them And so I think they were writing it so parents would read it and go and get outraged, but I don't think parents care. I don't think anybody cares about this report. So I don't think it's going to go anywhere. I think it's completely stupid.
I mean, what can you do if, like, your school, let's say, yep. you know, if your school has a policy that all kids in certain grades have to have Chromebooks, what are you going to do? I read this article. I'll tell you what. It looks like you guys are going to give us something that has a death date.
Is it death? Like, I don't want my kid getting a death date.
You know, in the IT departments or the, you know, I don't set the policy actually for that stuff. I brief people and give them options, but the division makes a decision.
Yeah.
So I would only talk somebody out of something if it were like actually bad, like VR. That's the only thing. Like, it would have to be like that bad before I would say anything. So what I'm saying is like that. Why even write that article?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It's almost like they yep. didn't even look at the fact that it's not like Google's going into the schools and saying, "Hey, buy Chromebooks." It's not like that.
No, it's not. And most people don't buy Google Chromebooks. They're buying Dell or HP or Samsung or Asus or whatever. Lenovo.
The only thing that's been shady that I don't like is you used to be able to put them in kiosk mode without the license, and now you have to have a license.
Oh, that is a little shady. Yep.
For maps testing and stuff, but yep. like, you know, they're giving. I mean, Chrome OS Tribes. Is free, and there's a lot of free stuff. So like, I get it. And yep. there were probably a lot of ways to beat it, so the kiosk weren't actually holding. And people were complaining, so I can kind of understand that. But I don't know. I don't think they're a shady business, like, whatsoever. And we've been buying almost exclusively, recently from Dell. We get good prices, and we yep. haven't had any parts with repairs or any problems with repairs and parts.
Yeah, we've had no issues with parts. Most of the time, most what comes back to us are broken screens. That's like a majority, like I would say 70% of our repair are broken screens. And
where's the article where someone's talking about how Apple changes their ports every 5 minutes?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Or sometimes puts multiple USB ports on the same power line. So if one goes out, all of them can go out. I think they've actually, yes. I don't think they do that anymore, but it that was a thing. And here's the thing, Tony, if you have an 11.6 inch Chromebook, the screens are interchangeable. You can take one out of a Dell and throw it into a Samsung and they will fit because right. they're not making the screens. Who's making the screens? Probably Samsung is making the screens.
Yeah, that's right. And everybody uses the same parts, basically.
And so they screw in the exact same to the lid. The connector is in the exact same place. It's the exact same type of pin connector. We've taken screens out of Samsung, put them into newer Samsungs, put them into Dells, put them into HPs. They're all interchangeable, all of them. When we discovered that, it was Taylor who discovered that. She goes, "Those look like the same." And I was like, "No, this is the Dell one because it has a different model number." And she goes, "Those," and then she put them like one screen on top of a number and they just lined up perfectly. She goes, "They're the same screen, Patrick." And I was like, "You are right. This is great. We don't have to buy screens anymore. We can just take them off of old dead Chromebooks that nobody uses." So it's great. Uh-oh. I think we've finally done it, folks. I think Tony glitched out here. Am I offline? Let's find out. Oh, yeah. Let's pause. Oh, okay. So one thing at a hotel is sometimes the internet can be a little unpredictable. And yeah, it just kind of dropped out on me. But it was only out for like a minute or two, and now we're back. But it's kind of a good time to kind of wrap things up and sign off anyway. What do you think, Tony?
I think it's good.
All right. So for IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And keep on babbling out there, and we'll catch you on the next podcast.